Chapter 11. I choose a profession. My aunt was waiting for me in London and was very pleased to see me again. She had left Mr. Dick behind to chase the donkeys off the grass.
"Well, Trot," she said during dinner that evening, "I have been thinking about your profession. I think you should become a lawyer. What do you think?"
"I like that idea. I like it very much," I said. "But isn't it expensive to enter that profession?"
"I have checked, and it will cost £1,000, she said.
"My dear aunt, that is a lot of money," I said. "You have already spent a great amount on me." She looked at me, then took my hand in hers and said,
"Trot, I want to make you into a good, intelligent and happy man. It is too late now to be a better friend to your poor father or mother, but I can be a good friend to you. Since you came to me as a boy, all dirty and tired, you have brought happiness to my life. You are my adopted child, and I want to help you in every way I can. Now, give me a kiss, and let's go and speak to someone about your new profession."
At noon, we went to the offices of Spenlow and Jorkins, where we saw four people working behind desks. One of them showed us into Mr. Spenlow's room.
"Mr. Spenlow will be here soon, ma'am," he said.
As we waited, I looked around at the expensive furniture and heavy books. Soon we heard hurried steps outside the door, and a small gentleman with a curly moustache entered the room.
"So, Master Copperfield," he said, "I hear that you would like to enter our profession."
I said that I would like that very much, and it was decided that I could begin working there as soon as I liked. My aunt and I then went to see a small room with a view of the River Thames.
"This is wonderful, aunt," I said, feeling very excited about living there as a young gentleman.
My aunt was pleased to see me so happy and immediately agreed to rent the room. She paid the money and signed a document, then left quickly on the carriage for Dover. She imagined that Mr. Dick needed help to chase the donkeys. I enjoyed living alone in the city very much. I had a paid job and plenty of money from my aunt, so I was a wealthy man. Steerforth came to see me often for dinner, and we opened many bottles of wine. I felt the same admiration for him then that I had felt as a child. One foggy evening, we drank a lot of wine and went to the theatre. I do not remember it very well, but we found ourselves in a very high, hot and brightly lit part of the theatre. We decided to go downstairs to where some ladies were, and there, sitting in the seat in front of me, was Agnes.
"Agnes," I said. "Please be quiet," she answered in an angry whisper. "The other ladies are trying to watch the show. You are drunk, Trotwood. Please ask your friend to take you home."
I got up and tried to say good night, but I could only say,
"Goodbye."
The next day, I felt terribly embarrassed when I remembered what had happened. It felt impossible to go out or even to get up. Later, Agnes came to see me. She looked so fresh and good, and I felt so untidy and stupid. "Please forgive me, Agnes," I begged, turning away my head. I'm so sorry that I embarrassed you last night. I hate that you saw me like that.
Sit down, Trotwood, said Agnes cheerfully. Don't be unhappy. If you can't trust me, who can you trust?
Oh, Agnes, I said, you are my good angel. She smiled, but also looked a little sad.
If I'm your good angel, then I must tell you about your bad angel, she said.
Do you mean Steerforth? I asked, but I knew the answer.
I do, Trotwood, she said. No, Agnes, he is a good friend to me, I cried. Please don't think that he is my bad angel because of last night.
It is not just that, Trotwood. I feel this because of other things that you have told me about him.
I don't know a lot about the world, but I feel that you have made a dangerous friend.
I was very attached to Steerforth, but hearing Agnes's thoughts made me feel differently towards him. Agnes calmly changed the conversation to her father's bad angel. She told me that Uriah Heep would soon be her father's business partner.
What? Uriah? I cried. You must not allow your father to do it. Uriah is very clever. He sees that my father drinks too much wine and uses that against him. He has made my father afraid of him. He forces him to sign documents for his clients, and I believe that he has forced my father to make him his business partner. He says that he is humble and thanks my father, but the truth is that Uriah controls the business now.
I had never seen Agnes cry before now.
Oh, Agnes, I said, my dear sister.
Soon Agnes returned to Canterbury, and Steerforth went back to Oxford. Days and weeks went by quickly, and I spent most of my time at the offices of Spenlow and Jawkins. To fully welcome me into the business, Mr. Spenlow invited me for dinner at his home one evening. We travelled there together after work and made polite conversation on the journey. We then walked through his beautiful garden and went into the house.
Where is Miss Dora? Mr. Spenlow asked the servant.
Dora, I thought, what a beautiful name. We turned into a room and I heard Mr. Spenlow say,
Mr. Copperfield, my daughter Dora.
After that, I did not notice anything or anyone in the room. All I could see was Dora Spenlow. I fell in love with her before I could say one word to her. I do not remember who was there at dinner that evening. I do not remember what we ate for dinner. I only remember Dora. I sat next to her. I talked to her. She had the sweetest little voice, the happiest little laugh, and the most beautiful curly hair that I had ever seen. After that evening, I knew that I had to marry Dora, or I could never be happy. As I watched Mr. Spenlow leave the office each day, I felt jealous that he was going home to Dora. I often walked miles to her house, hoping to see her in her garden. Many months later, Mr. Spenlow told me that it would be Dora's birthday soon and invited me to a picnic at their home. I was so excited about the event that I spent the days before it planning what to wear. When I nervously arrived on the day, Dora was sitting in the garden under a pretty purple tree. She looked very beautiful in a white hat and blue dress. I gave her flowers.
"Oh, thank you, Mr. Copperfield," she said.
Then she held the flowers out to her little dog, Jip, to smell, but he would not. Dora laughed and held the flowers closer to Jip. Then Jip bit one of the roses and Dora shouted at him.
"My poor, beautiful flowers," she cried.
Dora kept my flowers close to her and smelled them often. The sun shone, the birds sang, and the day felt too happy to be real. Later, I took Dora's little hand and kissed it, and she let me. The next day, I decided to ask Dora to marry me. To me, it was the only important question in the world, and Dora was the only person who could answer it. I went to her house when I knew that Mr. Spenlow would not be there and asked to see her. I was shown into an upstairs room where I found Dora painting the flowers that I had given her. She was very happy to see me, but Jip was less pleased. We both sat down on the sofa, and Jip sat between us. I felt very hot, and for a time I could not move. Then, and I do not know how I did it, I moved Jip and took Dora in my arms. I told her that I loved her. I told her that I would die without her. Jip grew very angry and jumped at me, but I did not stop. Dora cried, and I continued. I told her that no one had ever loved anyone like I loved her. By the end of my speech, Jip was calm on Dora's knee, and we all sat quietly together. Dora and I were engaged.